If you want to turn to John chapter 10, we're going to look at a few verses there this evening. We talked a little bit the last time we were together, I guess that may have been two times ago, that we handed out the sheet that had all of the I am statements of Jesus, and most of those, of course, being from the book of John, where he talks about who he is more than in any other place in the scriptures. And as we get into chapter 10, he's going to use a couple of those, and we're going to learn a little bit more about who he is from looking at John chapter 10. We'll begin in verse 1. He says, "Truly, truly, I say to you." Now remember, this is just after he's just been talking with the blind man and he after healing him. We talked about that this morning. He's talked to the Pharisees about their blindness because they just won't listen to him and learn from him. And so he's going to go a little further then with helping us to understand who we should trust when it comes to spiritual matters. He says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." Now let's stop right here for just a minute. Not a lot of us are shepherds anymore. Not a lot of us own sheep or know a whole lot about sheep. And even those that do, in the modern way that we do it, it's very different than the way it was in Jesus' day. People act very differently towards sheep. They use the dogs to drive the sheep, or they've got trucks, or they've got people on horses driving the sheep where they want them to go and these kinds of things. They keep them fenced in a pasture so they can't get out. Well, that's not the way it was in Jesus' day. And even all the way back to David. Remember, David was a shepherd boy before he became king. But all the way back, even before that, to Jacob, who kept possibly more like goats than sheep, but they all, even, and Rachel was a shepherdess, it says. And so these people have lived with these sheep for all this time, and they are very familiar with the way sheep work. Me, I've seen sheep on TV or maybe out there as I drove past them or on a plate. Lamb chops are good. But the fact of the matter is, Jesus understood how shepherding worked. And it worked very differently. Today, if somebody has sheep, they have their sheep on their property in their fence. But in Jesus' day, the sheep were all kept in a great big pen. So that they saved money. They only had to build one pen for all the sheep. And so you had two kinds of people that came to the pen. You had, of course, the guy that's there guarding the sheep. Then you had two kinds of people that came. You had the ones that would try to sneak in on the backside where the guard wouldn't see them and steal the sheep. You had sheep thieves. Just like we had cattle rustlers back in the Old West, and maybe even here years ago. Hopefully not too many around still. But you had those things. You had people that wanted to steal the sheep. And you know, you have people today who spiritually want to steal God's sheep away from Him. Satan, of course, is the biggest thief of all. He wants to steal everyone away from God. But the other person that might come to the gate was one of the shepherds. Now, there were, again, all of the sheep in the one pen. And they didn't brand the sheep like we might brand cattle. You know, everybody's got their own logo and they burn it on there so you can recognize, or they clip the ear and they've got the tag on there so you know whose pig or whose sheep or whatever it is. They didn't do it that way. The way they did it was that the shepherd spent so much time with those sheep. How many of you have got a dog? Got a dog? Now, if your dog and my dog and everybody else's dog was all in one pen together and you came out there and called your dog, would your dog come? If you've got them trained a little bit, they will, won't they? Now, if you've got some food in your hand, all the dogs are going to come. That's just the way dogs are. But if you've got, your dog recognizes your voice, recognizes you calling his name or her name, and that dog's going to come to you. Well, in Jesus' day, the sheep were like that. They have all these sheep out there, and they might belong to 5 or 10 different shepherds. But when the shepherd would come, and the gatekeeper would open the gate, he'd call his sheep. He'd call his sheep by name, just like you'd call your dog by name. So nowadays, you know, people don't name sheep and cows and things, you know, unless you just got one. But the big farmers, the big ranchers, they don't do that. But that's what people did in Jesus' day. And so he would call them by name, and they recognized his voice, and he'd lead them out. You see, Jesus calls us by name. He knows our name. And if we are his sheep, then we'll hear his voice. Notice what he says. He says, so he calls them by name, the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Notice, he doesn't drive them out with dogs. He doesn't chase them out with horses and whips and things like that. He calls them and leads them, and they follow him. Isn't that unusual? They just follow him where he goes. You see, Jesus is not driving us, like chasing us with dogs and things like that to get us to heaven. He's leading us. He's leading the way. Sometime you might try this. You get you a length of string about a foot or foot and a half long. And you take that string and you lay it down on the table. And now you try to put your finger on one end of that string, and you just try your best to push that string. Well, what's going to happen? If you take a piece of string or yarn and try to do that, you're going to push the end that your finger's on, and all the rest is just going to get all bunched up and tangled up, isn't it? But what if you put your finger on that end of that string and you pull it, if you lead it? Well, then you can get that string to go wherever you want it to go. But if you try to push that string, it's not going to work. Well, see, Jesus doesn't try to push us to heaven. He's pulling us to heaven. He's leading the way. And that's the reason he uses the shepherd as an example. And the reason that we sometimes don't understand that, because we think of animal husbandry, we think about the cattle drives where they, you know, they herd them all in there, barking dogs and horses and guys on horses with lassos and all these kind of things to push them into a place they want them to go. That's not the way it worked back then. And so we misunderstand sometimes those things because we don't understand how it worked. So he leads them out. Verse 4, then he says, when he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. They'll run away. Are we that kind of sheep? Where we'll follow the Savior's voice, we recognize His voice. Do we recognize Christ's teaching and not follow after the falsehoods that are taught by men? Do we do that? You see, this is the kind of parallel he's painting. He's talking about spiritual leadership, and he's comparing it to the way sheep follow their shepherd, and they're not going to follow some stranger that's calling out their names, even if the stranger knows the names of the sheep. They don't recognize his voice. They're going to run away from him. They're going to run to their shepherd. They recognize his voice. I would say children are like this, but sometimes children aren't like that. Some children will just run up to any old stranger. They don't care. But some children are like that, aren't they? They see a stranger, they run and grab mama's leg or daddy's leg, and they don't want to go close. But that's a difference in the way children are and the way sheep are. But he compares us to, we ought to be like sheep. Stay away from those strange voices, those strange teachings, those things that aren't from the Scriptures. You stay away from that. Listen to His voice. Listen to His teaching. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they didn't understand what He was saying to them. Big surprise there. They never seem to understand, do they? Well, we talked about this morning, though there's none so blind as those who will not see. They just refused to understand what Jesus was trying to tell them. So Jesus said to them again, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. Now he's gonna mix his metaphors a little bit here, because he's going to be the door, but he's going to be the shepherd in a minute too. Jesus can do that a lot, because he can be several things. We think about that with the church. You know, Jesus is the foundation of the church. But the church is His body. But He's the door through which we have to enter. But He's also the shepherd. And when we talk about, well, and the church is the bride of Christ. Well, can it be His body and His bride at the same time? Yeah, it can. But just different aspects of it. So as we look at this, he starts out, I'm the door. What does the door do? The door protects the sheep. It keeps them from just wandering out. It keeps them in the pen. Keeps them in the place where they're safe. Protects them from the wild animals. Protects them from the thieves. All of these things is what the door does. But also allows the shepherd access to the sheep. He says, I'm the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't listen to them. Now, does he mean nobody listened to them? No, there were a lot of people that listened to them, weren't there? All down through the ages, there were people who went off after this person or that person. And even in Jesus' day, there were those that wanted to listen to somebody else besides him. But his sheep, the true sheep, would listen to him. And then he says, I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. You're probably familiar with this passage, aren't you? I am come that they might have life and have it abundantly. The abundant life that Jesus offers. Well, how do you have that abundant life? Well, you've got to be in the sheep pen with the door shut so you're safe and secure. But he talks about, though, going in and out and finding pasture. Now understand, the sheep pen is not an exact duplicate or an exact metaphor for the church. We don't go in and out of the church. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about, you're going to be with me. You're going to go in and out. You're going to find your pasture, and then you're going to have the safety as well. You're going to have the green grass, and you're going to have the still waters that Psalm 23 talks about. But you're going to have the safety and the protection. And then he begins on the other side. He talks about the thief, but he says, now I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd will lay down his life for the sheep. Is the thief going to lay down his life for the sheep? No, the thief doesn't care. He's just looking for a free lamb dinner. That's all he wants. He doesn't care about the sheep at all. And if he's about to get caught, he'll drop that sheep off a cliff to get away if he has to. He'll do anything to save his own skin because he's the thief. But the good shepherd is willing to lay his life down. And of course, by that he means he's willing to die for the sheep. And we know that's true, don't we? We know he did that. He did die for us. He wasn't just talking big talk. And I've heard people say things, well, I'd die before I'd let this, that, or the other happen. And then that thing happens, and they go on about their business. And well, I thought you said that. I remember some people back before George W. Bush was elected. They said, well, he gets elected, I'm going to move to Canada. They're still living here in America. I remember people saying the same thing before Obama got, well, if Obama gets elected, I'm going to move to Canada. Guess what? They're still living here in America. They talk big talk. Jesus is not just talking a big talk. When he says, I'll lay down my life for the sheep, he wasn't kidding. He did lay down his life for his sheep to save them. And then he says, he who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming, and he leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. So first we had the thief who's going to break in and steal the sheep, and you know, he's going to destroy the sheep too. But then you've got this wolf coming. And some would say, well, of course the wolf could represent Satan, but it could represent anything that would be destructive to God's sheep. It could represent false teaching. It could represent things like materialism. It could represent things like gossip. There's all sorts of things that destroy the sheep, that tear the sheep to shreds. There's all sorts of conflict and problems. We were talking just before church that the congregation that we support out in Boulder, it's a very small little group that was started out there because there was a big congregation, but it got torn up by one of these wolves. It got torn up by one of these cult movements that came in there, and it just tore the church to shreds. And so now there's just this little group that's meeting. There are a lot of things. Envy and jealousy. See, this wolf could represent any number of things that would come in and try to destroy the church, try to destroy God's sheep. And he says, here's what happens though. The hired hand, and a lot of people say, well, the hired hand, that's the preacher. Well, maybe. Sometimes he's the wolf. I hope I'm not the wolf, and I hope I'm not the hired hand. But in that sense, because I want to be like Paul. You know, Paul, he cared for the sheep. He wasn't the good shepherd. He wasn't Jesus. But he cared for the sheep, didn't he? He was concerned for the church. He wanted what was best for the church. He prayed for the church, and he suffered for the church. And hopefully all of us would be like that. We're not Jesus. We're not the good shepherd. But that doesn't mean that we can't have care and concern for our fellow sheep. And of course, the elders are given the task of being shepherds of the flock and feeding the flock. Now, they don't own the flock, though. And sometimes, just like some preachers cause trouble in the church, sometimes there's elders that cause trouble in the church. And that's a sad thing to say. But sometimes that is the case too. Sometimes it's members in the church. Sometimes it's people from outside the church that come in and cause trouble. Any number of people come in and cause the trouble. But he says of the hired hand, here's where you find out. You know, how do you react? When something comes in and is tearing up the sheep, how are you going to react to that? You're going to run away and save your own skin? Or are you going to help protect the sheep? Well, the shepherd would help protect the sheep because he cares about them. But he said the hired hand flees because he cares nothing for the sheep. But then Jesus says, but I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Now then in verse 16, we're going to read this, then we're going to get to a misunderstanding about this passage. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. Now remember, who's Jesus talking to here? He's talking to the Pharisees and the Jews that were around, and you know, he's talking to the Jewish people. And that's very important we understand who he's talking to when he says, I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, so there will be one flock and one shepherd. Now this is obviously, maybe I shouldn't say obviously because it's not obvious to some folks. It should be clear to us that what he's talking about here, as he's talking to the Jews and calling them his sheep, or at least those that believe in him as his sheep, and saying, I have some other sheep that I need to bring so there'll be one flock. He's talking about the Gentiles. And the Bible talks about that throughout the New Testament, that he brought both together to be one. Now, there's some misconception about this passage. The Mormons, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as you've perhaps seen them called on their commercials, that church taught, and especially its founder, taught that this passage was a reference to the fact that Jesus was going to leave there, and he's going to come over here to North America back when the Indians were here, before any white man set foot on North American continent, and he was going to come over here to the Native Americans. And he, of course, he wouldn't have called them Native Americans back then, but he's going to get them. And that's where he says then that he got his New Testament, his another testament, another gospel in essence is what he's saying it is. That it was the one for the New World. And you know, they had this was, you know, these that we have that we call the Bible, well, that was for the Jews, and that was for the Gentiles over there in the Middle East, over there in Israel, in that area, and in the Eastern Hemisphere. But over here in the West, there was a whole nother Testament. And that's what he believed, and that's what he taught. And there's a lot of people that have fallen for that and have believed that. Well, that's just another wolf that's come in to destroy the sheep. But he's talking about the fact that not everyone that's going to be one of his sheep is a Jew. There are going to be Gentiles that are going to be his sheep as well. And he certainly doesn't say anything in here to make us think he was meaning he was going to come to North America and preach and teach. But that's what they believe, that after his crucifixion, he supposedly came over here and taught these people as well. Now, I don't know what they think about. Why didn't he go to China and teach the people in China? Why didn't he go down to Africa and teach the people? Why he picked to just come over here and teach the people that were here, but not the other people in the other parts of the world? I don't know what their answer to that would be. But he says there's going to be one flock and one shepherd. You see, there can only be one shepherd. And Jesus is our shepherd. And he's got to be our only shepherd, as far as the one who's actually the owner of the sheep. Now, that's what he talks about. He talks about the ones that own the sheep and the ones that don't own the sheep. Now, we have elders or shepherds in every congregation that's organized according to the way the Scriptures say. We're to have elders in every congregation, Titus was told. Appoint elders in every congregation. Those men are shepherds of the flock, but the flock doesn't belong to them. They have to understand that the flock still belongs to the Lord. It's His flock, His sheep. And they have to take care of it for Him. You know, that's a great responsibility, isn't it? You know, when something is yours, you know, if you've got $1,000, you can do whatever you want with that $1,000. It's your money. You can go gamble it away. You can go give it away. You can invest it. You can buy something with it. You can do whatever you want. It's your money. You can do whatever you want with it. But what if somebody else gave you $1,000 and said, "This is mine. You take care of it for me." Say, well, who'd be crazy enough to do that? We do it all the time. Well, those who have $1,000 anyway. It's called a bank. We take that money and we give it to the bank and we say, "Here, you take care of this for me." And we expect it to be there when we go to get it, don't we? And if it's not there, somebody's got some splaining to do. Because we know that's my money. I just made you one trusted to care for it. Well, it's the same way with God's sheep. They're His sheep. But He puts ministers and evangelists and elders or shepherds, bishops, they're sometimes called in the Bible, overseers, to care for that flock and take care of His sheep. And guess what? Any one of those folks, whether it's a preacher, minister, evangelist, an elder, a deacon, or anybody that tears up His sheep, they're going to have to answer for that, aren't they? And I'll tell you what, There is nothing that I would be more afraid of than having to face God in judgment after being one who split up and divided and caused harm to His church, to His sheep. That's a tough thing to have to think about. I wouldn't want to be in that boat, would you? That's not a pleasant place to even think about being. There's going to be some people that are going to be there. They're going to have to answer to God for why they destroyed His sheep. They're going to have to give an account for that. In verse 17, he says, "For this reason the Father loves me." Now, earlier, you remember in chapter 7, he said, "The Father loves me because I always do what pleases Him." Well, here, he says, here's another reason the Father loves me. "Because I lay down my life so that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father." Now you think about what he just said there. Did the Jews kill Jesus? Well, yes, but no. They did do the acts that caused his life to end, in a sense, but he allowed it, didn't he? He had to lay his life down. Can you kill God? Well, no, you can't kill God. Was Jesus God? Yes, he was. Well, could they kill him? No, they couldn't. Not really. And that's what Jesus said. No one takes my life. Nobody kills me. And that's what we saw back in chapter 8 at the end of it. They picked up stones. They were going to stone him to death. He walked away. Not a one of them got to throw a rock. They couldn't. Because he wasn't laying his life down right then. He was going to lay it down, and when it came time, he did lay it down. He didn't fight. You know, we sing that song, he could have called 10,000 angels. He could have called 100 million angels if he'd have wanted to. He could have called as many angels as there are in all existence to come and destroy this world. Yeah, he could have. But he laid his life down. He sacrificed it. It's not really a sacrifice if he's kicking and screaming and fighting the whole way, is it? He just went to the sacrifice. He gave up his life so that he could take it up again. And then, of course, as always, after Jesus speaks and says some of these deep things, and these are some deep things he talks about, there was a division among the Jews because of his words. Many of them said, "He has a demon and he's insane. Why are you listening to him?" And you know, we have to realize, and we've touched on this before, but I want to remind us of it because it has been a few weeks since we've even thought about this, but realize what Jesus is saying. Realize the things that he says and has said throughout the book of John. If somebody today came along and started saying the things that Jesus was saying, well, a lot of us would think he's crazy. We'd want to see him institutionalized. He could be dangerous. Now, what's the difference? If he was just saying the things Jesus said and didn't have the works, the miracles to back him up, then we'd definitely think this person is a dangerous person. But see, Jesus had the miracles to back him up. They were his witness. He even said it on occasions, remember? If you don't believe me, at least believe the works that I'm doing. But others said, these aren't the words of one who has a demon. And then they asked, can a demon open the eyes of the blind? Well, certainly never had been done before. See, one thing we have to understand about demons, this is just a little side note we'll close with, God will never allow Satan or any demons to have power that he doesn't have. He would never allow a demon to be able to open somebody's eyes, to heal somebody that was blind, unless he had someone on his side performing that power. You see, during the time when there was demon possession in the New Testament, guess what? God had people there that had the ability to cast those demons out. God's never going to let Satan have an advantage over him. Just doesn't work that way. He'd be a poor tactician if he did that. No, Satan has to work in the ways that God allows him to work, and God's never going to give him any authority to where he would have an advantage over God. So they ask the question, what could a demon have done, the miracles? And especially this guy that's been born blind that we just saw this morning had been healed and he could see for the first time in his life. Could a demon have done that? No. No, a demon couldn't have done that. So as we think about this tonight, as we look at Jesus and Him being the Good Shepherd, and we know He didn't have a demon. We know better than that. The only questions that we have to answer is, He said, "My sheep will know My voice, and they'll follow Me." Do you recognize the voice of Jesus, first of all? But secondly, are you following Him? Are you following in the footsteps of Jesus? Or are you going your own way? Because if you're going your own way, you're not really being one of His sheep. Because He said, my sheep are going to follow me. Now, obviously, none of us are going to follow Him perfectly all the time. We're going to falter, we're going to trip and stumble and fall, and we're going to wander off the path, and some sheep are going to wander far, far off the path and get themselves into trouble, and sometimes somebody has to go get them and bring them back, get them back in the line. But are we following Him? Are we listening to His voice? How do we hear God's voice? How do we hear the voice of Jesus? There's only one way. That's through His Word. Now, sometimes we like to talk to Him. Talk, talk, talk. Tell Him everything. And tell Him what to do even. I saw a little thing on the internet here this past week. Somebody said, well, I told God to do such and such. You told God? Really, did you? Wow. That doesn't work that way. See, He tells us, and we listen and we follow. That's the way that's supposed to work. But we live in a country where somewhere around 85 to 90% of people believe in prayer. They believe in talking to God and do it regularly according to their own admissions, as much as you can trust it. But assuming that's the case, that nearly 9 out of every 10 people believe in praying and pray. They talk to God. Do you know how many in our country listen to God? Oh, now, if you talk about folks that think God speaks to them in their own head, probably quite a bit more. But when you talk about how many people actually open their Bibles up and read it, it drops down to around 20%. So, 9 out of 10 think it's important to pray and talk to God. 2 out of 10 think it's important to read the Bible and listen to what He says. That means somewhere out there, the 7 out of 10 folks that think what they've got to say is more important than what God's got to say. I hope you're not one of those folks. Because you're thinking too highly of yourself if you think you've got things more important to say than what God has to say to you. We need to be listening to the voice of our shepherd and following Him. If you're not doing that tonight, get started. Get back on track. Do whatever you need to do to be following your shepherd. Because the shepherd's the only one who can lead us home. We will never find our way on our own. We've got to follow Him. If you need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.